If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about primary partners and priority in polyamory.
Ooh, alliteration.
Alliteration
for
the
win. So clever.
So in this, we're going to talk, after our episode, two episodes ago, about solo polyamory, we've been talking with a lot of people more about hierarchy and... also, you know, in other discussion groups, hearing people talk about their rules for their partners or how they refer to their primary and secondary or non-primary partners, things like that. And so we wanted to kind of go back and have this bigger discussion about hierarchy itself and about what it means to have a primary partner versus just giving a relationship priority.
For a long time on this podcast and in our lives, we've had a general, you know, non-hierarchy stance that we kind of stay away from strict prescriptive hierarchy. However, a lot of people hear that and then they think it means like, oh, that means everything's egalitarian. That must mean like you treat all your partners the same, or that must mean maybe your relationships are not very intense, or that means that like you don't want to get married to someone, or you don't want to raise kids with someone, or you don't want to live with someone.
They equate it with casual.
Yeah. And so the thing is that like obviously as human beings, like we all have priorities for everything, even outside of the scope of relationships. So in this episode, we just kind of wanted to talk about that kind of fine line between what means making a relationship primary versus what means making a relationship one of your priorities. And so generally what we, to kind of lay the ground rules, right?
Lay the foundation for the discussion?
For the field of play here is, The way we tend to explain hierarchy to people is we make a distinction between prescriptive and descriptive hierarchy.
Well, yeah, and this is something that we got from talking with Franklin Vo a bunch of episodes ago when we talked with him and Eve Rickert. And basically the difference is that prescriptive hierarchy is what most people are talking about when they say, oh, this is my primary partner. It's this idea that I've chosen one partner and I've labeled them primary. I've prescribed them, prescriptive, as primary. And so then I'm going to do things to try to keep them primary, whether it's setting up rules or like making agreements that I'm going to spend more nights a week with them than anyone else, or I won't spend a night with anyone, or they have to like give permission for any other partners or something. Like there's things put in place to try to ensure that this relationship stays primary above all the others.
And there's a reason that prescriptive hierarchy is so popular within the community of non-monogamous and polyamorous people. You know, the reason is that we're kind of trained growing up that when you're in a relationship with someone, they make you their number one. And, like, you're the queen bee or the king bee.
King bee?
The king bee?
That's not a thing. But
you're, like, the queen bee or the king cobra in their life. And so, of course, to fit other partners into that, like, you got to stay as number one, and then everyone else kind of has to shuffle in behind is kind of the assumption.
I think also that a lot of people come to polyamory through opening up a relationship. And so coming from a monogamous relationship to opening up to an open relationship or polyamory is kind of a scary thing. It seems threatening to that relationship. And so establishing this idea of a primary partner gives a sense of security, I think, is the idea. It also, like we talked about before, it makes it more heteronormative. It makes it seem more like we're normal.
Exactly, yeah. We're normal. Our relationship looks almost exactly the same as it did before. Right. There's just some extra things on the side. But other than that, like, it's all the same. It's all good in the hood.
And then on the other side, so that's prescriptive hierarchy. And on the other side is descriptive hierarchy. And what this is using the term primary or non-primary simply to describe a relationship to somebody else, but it's not something that you've decided in advance, like, this is my primary and anyone else is going to be not primary, and I'm going to enforce that. It's just using primary as a term to describe how you're, how, like, to describe the relative priority of your relationships. And that's what we want to talk about mostly on this episode, is this concept of priority.
And so, I mean, and the last thing is, when people are using primary, non-primary descriptively rather than prescriptively, there's kind of a sense that this is also potentially fluid. So the idea being that there can be multiple partners that you consider primary. And maybe they will stay primary throughout the rest of your life. Maybe they will not.
Which is really true of any kind of primary partner. We just pretend that it's not when we do the prescriptive hierarchy.
Which is something that we'll get to later in the episode.
Great. So taking from that, like Dedeker was mentioning earlier, that when you talk to people about being non-hierarchical poly, or like not having primary partners,
Like not picking a primary partner,
right, that, like, we described descriptive hierarchy of using those labels to describe your partners, but for us, like, we tend to not even use those words descriptively because of how much people associate it with this prescriptive hierarchy of, you know, enforcing that someone stays primary. But so Dedeker was saying earlier that there's this assumption that when you say you're not hierarchical means that you don't want to entwine your life with someone. You don't want to, like, do those normal primary things, right? Like sharing and like really tying your lives together.
And so if you guys listen to our solo polyamory episode, one of the hallmarks of someone who identifies as a solo polyamorous means that they have multiple relationships, but they do not choose to do normal coupley things in any of those relationships, such as living together or sharing finances or raising children. That at that time, they're not choosing to do that. However,
like, not choosing to do that specifically with a partner.
With a partner.
Like, looking for a partner to do that
with. The thing is, though, that these things that are on the relationship escalator, as it were, you know, these things that are the normal benchmarks of a progressing relationship, things such as living together, sharing a bank account, having kids, you know, maybe even owning property together, maybe even starting businesses together, maybe even recording a podcast together, that those are things that are all possible to have in your relationships without necessarily designating one person primary, or without creating a really rigid hierarchical system in your relationships.
Right, exactly. An example that we talked about a little bit on that episode, which I wanted to come back to, is this idea of living together. That a lot of times the partner you live with just kind of becomes de facto your primary partner, or that you feel like they would need to be your primary partner before you would live with them, because there's kind of this idea of security in having a primary partner. But like we were talking about before, was this idea that you could live together with multiple partners, not necessarily at the same time, you know, where you could live half of the year with one partner and half with another, or even something more complicated than that.
Which people do.
There are lots of different options for that, or like sharing a bank account, that this isn't necessarily something you could only do with one partner. Like, maybe with a couple different partners that are very, you know, serious committed relationships for you, you could have shared accounts that you each put money into to save up to take trips together or something that.
And with child rearing, like, there are a lot of people who choose to raise their children with multiple partners in their home with them. So some people choose to, you know, raise kids with their kids having a multi-parent home, or some people may choose to be part of the child rearing process for another partner's kids. You know, which means that they don't necessarily have to cohabit with that partner in order to be part of the child rearing process.
And share in those duties of helping to raise that kid and take care of them.
So, which is, like, so, honestly, just from a, like, a modern standpoint, it's, like, so crazy. Like, it's so outside the whole, like, Norman Rockwell picture of, like, the small nuclear family. However, I mean, I think it's just so important for people to know that, like, you can have these things, but they don't necessarily have to look that particular way, and they don't all have to come from the same partner. Like, I feel like a lot of people think that, like, oh, if I do want these things, that means I have to have a primary partner, or I have to designate one primary, or, like, one partner as primary. And, like, you got a wide variety of options. You know, those all could come from one person. They could come from multiple people.
Mm-hmm. And so to go back to all of this, like we're talking about sharing a house or raising kids together or, you know, sharing a bank account or starting a business together, these are not, if you really did think that not having hierarchy meant that all your relationships would have to be equal, I can't imagine that if I had one partner that I felt comfortable sharing some of my finances with, that I would want to do that with all of my partners. Like, that's absurd.
Well, you know, actually, it's funny in Islam. So in Islam, like, men are technically allowed to have more than one wife.
Right.
It doesn't go the other way, but men are allowed to have more than one wife. However, they really stress this importance of, like, if you have more than one wife, like, you need to equally take care of each of them. As in, if you buy a $2 million home for your first wife, you better be able to buy a $2 million home for your second wife.
Right. Or all your other wives.
All your other wives. Yeah. Which is kind of funny because on the one side, it's kind of good because it's like ensuring, like, sure, maybe you're marrying a bunch of wives, but you've got to make sure that you're taking care of all
right.
of them.
Right, it's not like you're marrying the new one and then neglecting
exactly.
the old one or vice versa.
But then at the same time, it's still this thing of, like, actually strictly having egalitarian relationships is a little bit untenable.
Right. So that's the thing, is we want to stress that just like with any people in your life, right, you don't treat all of them perfectly equally in terms of the amount of time that you spend or the amount of money that you spend or the amount of trust that you have in them even. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to go there, but it's true. You know, there are some friends I know I can count on always 100% and others that, like, I know I can sort of count on, but like they wouldn't be the one I would call, you know, if I'm on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and I really need them to answer the phone.
Is that what your inner hierarchy is?
Yes.
Who would I phone a friend to?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know.
Uh-huh.
Am I on that list?
Well, we'll talk about that in another episode.
Well, okay, so the thing is with egalitarianism is that there's very few people out there who approach poly relationships actually being like, okay, two nights of the week with this person, two nights of the week with that person, two nights of the week with this person.
And then if you try to get a fourth partner, you can't do it because there's not eight days in a week.
except in that Beatles song.
Yes.
But so there's very few people who actually take that approach. It's more what I see, especially with clients, is that, you know, when there's jealousy issues, when there's insecurity issues, that someone will ask, like, okay, like, well, if you took a 5-day vacation with so-and-so, you need to take a 5-day vacation with me. Like, if you spent $200 on a fancy dinner with so-and-so, you need to spend $200 on a fancy dinner with me.
Right.
And it can be really tempting, especially when we're trying to advocate for our needs, it can be tempting to kind of fight for those things.
Yeah, so, well, that's fair for me to ask for
exactly.
what I want.
Exactly. The problem being that, like, life doesn't always fit into these nice, neat little boxes. And so, you know, over the course of your life, like, your relationships will change, the importance of them to you will change depending on any number of factors, age, circumstances, geographic location. You know, that's one that affects me and Jace quite a lot, is that when we're not geographically close to each other, when we're on opposite sides of the planet, like, although we still prioritize each other, you know,
there's fewer ways we can prioritize each other, priority
for, like, physical affection and the time spent physically with someone else changes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not, like, leaving two or three nights a week where I'm sitting at home not doing anything so I can Skype with Dedeker.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when we're not together, we're not gonna, you know, our priority level's gonna change. Whereas when we're together in Japan, like we are right now, we see each other pretty much every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all can change over time and vary, and it's not about needing to create this idea of equality between your partners. It's more about not enforcing a top-down hierarchy on them, but instead, like, having the priorities that you want to have, advocating for yourself, your partners can do that too, and maybe everyone's not always going to get everything they want all the time, but that's what happens no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hierarchy doesn't fix that problem, people just think that it will.
Just think that it does.
Yeah.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Okay, back in the game.
Game
on.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about priority. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, if you are deciding, like, okay, well, I'm not going to have this strict primary, secondary, prescriptive hierarchy in my relationships.
Right.
But what does priority look like? Because obviously, if you're looking into buying a house and you want to, like, you know, buy a house with somebody, mm-hmm. and you're trying to decide, well, where should I live? Where should we go? What should I do? You know, you're not going to ask the person you just went on a first date with what their opinion to weigh in, like to really seriously weigh in on mm-hmm. where we should buy our house.
Right.
You know, you have priorities in your life, mm-hmm. The same way you have in the whole rest of your life with different topics.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, like you gave that example of buying a house. But also in terms of your priorities, like there are things in your life that's not just, you know, who am I going to spend a little more time with, but also who am I going to, you know, like things, priorities like commitments, I guess, is how I would think of them more than just, because when we say priority, people could think like, oh, that's fine for just on a whim, like, oh, I just feel like spending more time with this person.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about priority, we are talking about commitments as well. Mm. And the example is, if you did buy a house with somebody, you are committed to that mortgage payment with them, right? And so in budgeting your money every month, like that money for that mortgage together is going to take priority over your free, you know, frivolous spending or taking trips or something. Well, at least hopefully you're responsible with your money like that. I mean, if you have children, of course, like not only is that child going to take priority in terms of your money and your time, but also probably the partner that you had that child with.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's not your child, but one that you're helping raise, like that family group is still going to be a priority.
Yeah.
And that's something you're committed to. It's not just kind of on a whim. I think most people with children would say like, absolutely. Yeah. Like, that's my priority above anything else. But then there's also temporary priority changes. And the example of this is, like, if you have a partner that's really in need for some reason. This could be, you know, struggling with an illness. And so you're going to make them a priority to be there with them. It's not just like, well, you're not convenient, so I'm out.
Right? That's the thing. I mean, I've witnessed, unfortunately, like, some really sad situations, particularly with people who had a strict hierarchy, where, like, maybe a secondary partner was super, super sick or, like, really needed help. But the primary partner was like, well, sorry, like, this was the night that we decided that we were going to spend together, so, like, you can't go take care of this other person that you love. And so that's the thing, is, like, the sense of...
That's what, where it can start to go
wrong. Like, the sense of priority is something that's more flexible than what hierarchy allows for.
Right.
And but it's kind of the same way that, like, if one of your kids gets super, super sick...
Obviously, you know, you're going to spend a little more time
taking care of
one.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean that you're going to totally neglect the healthy one.
Right.
But it means that for a little while, like, that kid needs a little more prioritization of your time and energy. And the thing is, like, this all sounds like really basic, super common sense stuff, because it is. But for some reason, when it comes to bringing in multiple romantic partners, like, people get all freaked out about
it. Be like, well, if we don't have, like, if I'm not your primary partner, like, what happens if I get sick or I lose my job, like, I'm not going to be convenient, and you're just going to spend all your time with someone else. And it's kind of, ignoring this idea that we are still committed to our partners,
yes,
and still love them and care,
yeah,
about them,
yeah,
not just because they're convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, if someone's sick, or even if, you know, in terms of money priority, if I have a partner who had some, you know, an accident happen where all of a sudden she had much less money, or mm-hmm, lost her job or something, I might prioritize a little bit more of my money to, mm-hmm, you know, taking her out, or, you know, maybe, mm-hmm, I'm not going to pay her rent for her or something, mm-hmm, but like doing more nice things, or, you know, buying her stuff,
yeah,
if she needs them, because temporarily she's in a situation where she needs that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that it's not to say like, that's always the person I'm going to spend more of my money on.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do care about our partners.
Yeah.
And hopefully, and we talked about this on our Metamorphs episode, on a few of our different Metamorphs episodes, but this idea that as a good Metamorph, part of what you'd want to do is support that.
Mm-hmm.
And say, like, yeah, if a Metamorph of yours is having trouble, saying, yeah, of course, like, please, mm-hmm, like, spend some more time with them, like, support them, because I would hope,
yeah,
that you would do that for me in the,
exactly,
same situation, right?
Exactly.
That we want to care for our Metamorphs like they're also,
yeah,
our friends.
Yeah, yeah. So ultimately, I mean, I think the big takeaway that we would want here, which is a takeaway that we kind of come back to a lot,
mm-hmm,
which is that really, like, flexibility and fluidity is going to serve you in your relationships much better than something that's a rigid structure. As in, the flexibility and fluidity of priority,
mm-hmm,
is going to just kind of give more lifeblood to your relationships in general, rather, mm-hmm, than trying to keep everyone in a little box and trying to keep everyone in this hierarchy.
Right.
In, like, trying to essentially force priority to happen in certain areas.
Right. And I know that this is a scary thing, and,
mm-hmm,
a lot of people really resist this because it's so different from how their relationship's been for a long time, especially,
mm-hmm,
if they were originally monogamous and then opened up. And I get that. It is a scary,
mm-hmm,
thing. It is something that you can struggle with. But if it helps, if this is at all helpful, is to realize that that scariness simply comes from the scariness of that idea rather than the reality,
mm-hmm,
of it.
Mm-hmm.
That we have this idea that things like marriage make your relationship more secure.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't actually.
Yeah.
Like, marriage is a symbol of a commitment, but the marriage itself isn't what makes your relationship secure.
Mm.
It's that relationship itself. And it's also it's not the thing that keeps it secure when it's bad, right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And same with primary. It's,
uh-huh,
a label we put on something, or something we try to do to defend something, but really, ultimately, that relationship is what it is. Like, we
yeah,
can't force feelings to be a certain way. But also, if you have been together for a long time, you have so much history,
mm-hmm,
so much old relationship energy, that you don't have so much to be threatened by,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
probably are going to stay prioritized,
mm-hmm,
you know, because of that history together. The longer,
mm-hmm,
you've been together having a good relationship,
mm-hmm,
the more you just are going to be a priority, the more,
mm-hmm,
your lives are going to be intertwined. You,
mm-hmm,
don't need to force that to have it. So it's not like,
mm-hmm,
saying by taking away that hierarchy, you're going to lose all those things. Like,
yeah,
no, you're probably going to have them all still.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just not going to be kind of forcing it, and you're going to save yourself from some of those temptations to do that tit for tat sort of thinking of, like,
mm,
well, you spent two nights with them, so you got it,
yeah,
with,
yeah,
me,
yeah,
now,
yeah, yeah,
but it can be a little more flexible.
Well, I mean, I understand why people do this, is because obviously, like we said, it is scary, and there's kind of this fear of, like, if I don't get a promise ahead of time from my partner that they're,
mm-hmm,
going to make me a priority, then they won't. There's this fear that unless I,
right,
set it up ahead of time, that I'm not going to get what I need. So there's that fear. And then I think there's also the fear of, like, oh, I might have to actually ask for what I need.
Maybe,
like, the,
yeah,
idea, because I think there's kind of this thinking that, like, if I set this relationship as primary, that means my partner is going to automatically make all the decisions in favor of me and in favor of this relationship,
mm,
and I won't have to, like, actually ask for what it is that I need.
Sure.
Like, I'll just,
yeah,
get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's another thing coming in, because, you know, as relationships shift and change and relationship landscapes are in flux, you know, there might be a time where maybe I have to come to you and be like, hey, you know what, actually, like, we haven't been texting as often, and I kind of like,
mm-hmm,
that. Like, could we, like, maybe try to text more often rather than,
mm-hmm,
fuming, like, hey, you said that I was a priority and you're not texting me. Like,
right.
That's
and
what
I know
you're
that
supposed
you're texting this other person.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Exactly.
Totally.
You get it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it leads to those kind of destructive rules or trying to limit another relationship out of defense of your own.
Yeah, yeah.
That ultimately will hurt your own relationship and possibly end it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our big takeaway from that. And to end out this episode, though, we want to talk about a fun little topic.
Yeah, now we're going to take for something completely different. Take a little bit of a left turn.
Yes. So this is from an email that we got from one of our listeners named Ivy Nelson. And she said, I've started working on a series of romance suspense novels that will feature a polyamorous woman as the main character. I'm actually working out my own issues in polyamory, and I've found that writing about it helps deconstruct my own dilemmas. Because it's a series, I've considered making a different one of her relationships the focal point of each novel. What are your thoughts on that? Would it be better to weave all of her relationships into all of the stories? I'm going back and forth on the issue. On the one hand, focusing on one relationship will allow readers to get to know each of her partners very well over the course of the whole series. On the other hand, doing it this way almost feels like I would be sticking too close to the one relationship formula that most romance novels follow. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'd also love to hear about some things you would enjoy seeing in a piece of polyamorous fiction. I know polyfiction is very scarce, but have you found any that you like?
This is like, this could be really like, could be a whole topic.
You know
just
what we should
talk
do?
About like poly in the media and...
You know what we should do when this comes out? Mm-hmm. We should put this this discussion question in the patron-only Facebook group for the Patreon subscribers.
Because uh-huh.
some of them are writers as well.
Right.
And also, you know, really actively contributing.
Right.
That would
right.
be a cool discussion to talk
Excellent.
About what we would like to see.
Yeah.
Because we've been
in
talking about what we'd like to see in poly video content on the web.
It'd
be cool to talk about this for novels as well.
Yeah.
That would be an awesome place for that.
It's interesting. I go back and forth on her talking about making each book focus on a different relationship, because I do like the idea of giving each relationship like weight and detail and giving readers a chance to really know the ins and outs of that relationship. But I get how she doesn't want to fall into like just the formula of like, well, just this one relationship's important, and then the others
in
are all
one,
just
yeah.
in this one to just kind of chop liver. I don't know.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want someone to just read one book and assume that it's like, well, there's obviously this primary and then all these others are like casual dating, which is where people tend to go when they look at it from the
outside. My question is, how long is this series? How many partners does this woman have? It's going to be like a 10-book series?
The thought that I had was like, what if each book, rather than, like, each book might emphasize certain partners more based, or, you know, like in the second book, maybe she could get a new partner and it's kind of more about like, that, like how that changes things with her current partners. Maybe she has a game-changing relationship
hang on, though. Because she says, it's a series of romance / suspense novels.
Yeah.
What is the suspense mechanic? Is it suspense over her romance? Like,
well, I assume it's like...
Is it a whodunit?
Like, she's also a detective.
Is it like, I have so many partners, I need to figure out who I promised that I would go on a date with to this thing,
because
my Google Calendar crashed, because that's a suspense novel.
Yeah,
that's
like, I remember I had a date, but I don't remember who it's with, so the suspense is like, who's going to show up?
Like, I remember I told somebody about, like, my schedule change, but, like, who?
That's ridiculous.
That'd be funny to, like, ridiculous. Only 10 people.
Yeah,
but.
yeah. Very niche. But, okay, so, I mean, I don't know, I think it'd be fun to deal with certain themes. Like, maybe one could be about some sort of change in a relationship, maybe brought on by a new partner that, you know, she falls super in love with and kind of navigating that. Maybe she could model herself after Dedeker and, like, then she starts traveling the world and all of a sudden has to deal with long-distance relationships and new partners.
I could write a whole romance / suspense novel series about my life the past 10 months or so.
Yeah. You know, or whatever, like, that it could be about different, like, themes within relationships and still kind of dealing with all of them. You know, in one of them, there could be a conflict between some of her partners or her and a metamor that hopefully would get resolved by the end of that book. There's, like, lots of different themes that you don't have to focus on just one specific partner to be able to focus on a specific theme.
I think that makes
theme.
Sense.
Like, that's where I would lean.
Yeah, which relationships seem more relevant for exploring that particular
theme. Just because I would worry about that whole...
Yeah.
But like, the partners you deal with in each book would be very interrelated. So it's not like...
Yeah, that's what I would
assume.
It's
not like you're trying to tell three different, totally separate romance stories. But, you know, maybe two of the guys are roommates. Or a guy and a girl that are roommates, and she starts dating both.
Then
has to, like, navigate that. Like, are we...
Suspenseful.
Are we a triad? Or are we a V? Like, what's happening?
So much suspense. Oh, poly mysteries.
But the question I have, though, that I think would be the one for the discussion group, is, like, what are some themes, like, what are some things that you wish you did see in polyamorous fiction? You know, like we were having a long conversation, actually, just a couple days ago about movies and TV shows specifically, but of trying to think of characters who were not just polyamorous, because there's not very many of those, but characters that are some kind of non-heteronormative
sexuality or gender expression or something.
Right. That are in a show or a movie where the movie's not about that. Like, that's not the only thing that defines their character. Something we were thinking about. We couldn't really come up with many examples.
At least not
that.
Off the top of our head. I know that on the internet, like, people have compiled, you know, lists and databases of these things.
But it is definitely something that's less common.
Yeah, but so it kind of falls into that trap, is that, like, at least in any kind of current piece of media or fiction, is that you can't have necessarily a polyamorous character where that's just kind of a piece of trivia about them. That's not, like, the main basis of their character.
Like we talked about, like, in Scott Pilgrim, his roommate is gay, and that's acknowledged, but it's never a
thing. It's not a thing,
His roommate never even really dates anyone.
Yeah, he does. He brings people, like, because he brings guys home and stuff like that.
But it's, like, not a thing.
But it's not, just like, a thing. Like, he's still a character on his own.
He's just a character who happens to be gay. It's one of the few examples of that, but I think you couldn't do that yet with Polly. Because not enough people, like, you say gay and everyone goes, I understand that. Polly's not there
Polly's still a discussion, Okay. Cool.
Awesome. The one thing I did want to say about that, in terms of themes for a Polly book, is about, in a lot of times in romance, the conflict is the romance itself.
Yeah.
And I think it would be interesting in content about polyamory, and this I haven't seen yet, it's content where the conflict, like the resistance or the obstacle, isn't like a struggle with polyamory. That it's something else, you know, that it's something to do with your job, or this is a suspense series, so maybe it's about the mystery case,
or about the aliens coming, or some kind of weird crack operatives, like, something. Who the heck knows?
Right, but the idea that, like, you can still, like, focus on the romance and maybe have some, like, sort of B story arcs that have to do with, like, things in the polyamory relationships, but that's, like, the struggle isn't, like, dealing with how weird and different poly is. That's something I would love to see. I think there's still...
Well, it's kind of, like, most... I feel like that's the narrative that's being told in most kind of instances in popular media.
Of what?
Like, of mostly that when they introduce poly into a storyline...
Right.
It tends to be about, like,
the struggle
to get...
Yeah, so I think it would be interesting to see some things that are not dealing with that aspect. Or if this is a series, maybe she could at first and then moves on from that to, I don't know.
Who knows?
Some thoughts. Awesome. Well, I hope this is helpful, Ivy.
Yeah, well, Ivy, we're going to put this question into our little private Facebook discussion group for our special patrons
And so if you guys are one of our patrons in the private Facebook group, you can check that out there. Again, if you want to support us, that's Patreon, patreon.com/multiamory. And also, go check us out on iTunes or Stitcher. Write us a review, or you can go to our website, multiamory.com, tweet at us on Twitter, at multiamory, email us at info@multiamory.com. Stay in touch. Let us know what you think. We love hearing from you guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.